Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are here for the very first time, welcome home. It's here that you get the unvarnished truth about what it really takes to launch and grow a sustainable business as an entrepreneur. And today I am delighted to introduce you to Chelsea C. Williams. Chelsea is a workplace strategist, international speaker, and social entrepreneur. I had the pleasure, the delight of working with Chelsea last year, and I can't wait for you to hear some of the amazing things she is doing about transforming workplaces around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And she's also the founder of College Code. Welcome, Chelsea.
Oh, Deb, hello. So excited to be here and connecting with your community today.
I am so excited to have you here. And we were chatting briefly just before hitting this recording, and we ask everyone who joins the show, what is your life after corporate story? Do you have one?
I do. I have a life after corporate story. So I actually started my business after 8 years on Wall Street. So I left college. I went to Spelman College, a historically Black women's college in Atlanta, Georgia. Spelman is a liberal arts college. So while there, I studied economics. And most students who go to liberal arts colleges who study economics end up in financial services. So I followed suit with so many people and ended up leaving Atlanta and heading to New York City to start my career. I started my career in a rotational program at Barclays Investment Bank. That obviously led me into selecting my pathway in the human capital space, really maximizing human talent from the attraction and recruitment stages all the way through development and promotion. And that is really, Deb, where I built this passion for people, this passion for inclusion. I realized in my time there, I had a lot of experiences there building global programs, engaging with the next generation of workers. So quite a bit of work in the university recruiting and relations space, heading to universities, working with professors, working with students, and building the pipeline. And I noticed in that time, there was a significant disparity as it related to representation. And so we were making all these strides. We were making all these investments, Deb. We had all these, you know, kind of fancy goals, but really in terms of moving the needle and really not just recruiting early stage professionals, but making sure the cultures that they go into are engaging and healthy and productive. That was an opportunity that I saw in my Wall Street days. And so I will tell you, I was at the University of Pennsylvania one day, sitting in the lobby of the Ritz, just thinking through my experience, kind of like what's next for me, what matters. And in that moment, I started writing the business plan for what is now College Code. And so I can literally vividly remember just having this journal that I took with me to every single campus visit. And I filled that journal with my observations and my visions and all of the things that I thought were possible and thoughtfully supporting the next generation. I wrote the plan for College Code. And then I, you know, said to myself, well, I think I'm going to make the transition. And so I set a date, June 2018, and I had saved at the time. So I think my story was I had prepared for wanting to do this transition. I didn't have all of the steps obviously outlined, but I had an intention set that it was the time. And so that is really the start of what has been two of the most amazing years of my life, starting this business and working with organizations.
So that's amazing. You know, you were already doing it in the corporate world. You saw the need to take it elsewhere. Was it just the desire to make a broader impact across companies and organizations in getting more diversity in representation, or was there something that was, you know, most people leave the workforce because they're not happy, right? So there's something that's not satisfying. Was there a catalyst for you to decide, okay, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to deliberately plan for my exit and my business launch. Was there something that you felt or experienced that told you it was time to leave?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question, Deb, because I think you're right. A lot of people are propelled into entrepreneurship through a challenge they may be experiencing on the job. You know, really for me, it was the opposite. Honestly, Deb, at the time at which I chose to leave, many would say, why is she leaving now? I had just been promoted to vice president. I was really at that point engaging the board of directors. I was working with our managing directors. I had helped to launch a global philanthropic initiative that basically serves communities and individuals across our investment bank. So leaving was really like, why is she doing it? She's got everything set up. But I think, Deb, it comes down to the question, and we've talked about it, what is your vision? And so I obviously had the vision that was, there's a lot of work we can do in better developing and maximizing talent, particularly at the early stage, hence the business plan for College Code. But it was also my vision, Deb. It was that I didn't want to necessarily 5-10 years down the line be the head of HR, the head of diversity and inclusion for the bank. I knew there was more in the realm of, to your point, industry exposure, to your point, being able to do a lot of different projects that make an impact, being able to really be creative and flexible with my time. There were some personal values in the conversation that I also, at the time when I was deciding to leave, was like, you know what? I want to have more flexibility. I want to be able to build something that I can pass on. So the legacy piece. And so that played a role as well.
Yeah. So it was more than making an impact in one company, but really building that legacy and also having the lifestyle. Were you ever afraid? I mean, did you ever think, what happens if this doesn't turn out the way that it's laid out in my business plan?
Oh, yes. Okay. I specifically can remember so many fearful moments. You know, again, even when I literally remember sitting in the lobby of the Ritz in Philly and literally saying to myself, okay, I have all these notes. This is the vision, but like literally having a very emotional moment and a moment that took me to prayer that literally I was like, God, I feel that you're leading me to do this, but this sounds very scary. Like I haven't had anyone, you know, my immediate family take this type of step, right? There were so many things, even financially, Deb, I had saved and I'm pride myself in being pretty financially literate, but I was still like, I live in New York City. Like there's a lot of obligations that I have, not a trust fund baby, right? So I had to really think through. I was thinking a lot about the financial piece, especially, Deb, again, when I was leaving a really competitive salary and really overall compensation at my firm. So the fear for me was more the security piece. It wasn't that I necessarily doubted that there could be some type of impact from the actual vision of the business. Of course, that naturally came as I started to take those steps. But really, at first for me, it was financial. That was a lot of the initial fear that I had.
And that's so common, right? So they're the women who tend to make the leap to entrepreneur tend to be at the VP, senior VP, group vice president level and have lucrative careers. And it's not so easy to replace that six-figure salary when you're first starting out. So bravo for you for your financial literacy and having that cushion to fall back on. And yeah, New York City is an expensive place to be, but your drive, your motivation, your enthusiasm, and your trust in being guided by a higher power. And I've had so many conversations with women leaders of faith lately about, you know, when you're asking for direction and you receive the answer, it's like, okay, is there room for fear, you know, or do I just trust and heed the call? So I'd love for you to share with our listeners, what was it like for you, Chelsea, in launching College Code? I mean, did everything work smoothly? How did you take the concept from the business page and actually bring it to life?
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful question. So you were actually talking about it a little bit earlier. it was completely a test of my faith. And I think of faith as taking those steps when you don't know what's ahead of you. You don't even have a, you know, crack through the door of seeing what's possible. You step out believing that what you feel and experience in your heart is what you're supposed to do, and it's going to lead to greater opportunities. So I think for me, when I think about the beginning stages, there were a few things that really helped me. So one of the first things was I transitioned out of financial services with a little bit of a cushion, in the sense that I had applied for this fellowship. Fellowship is called Education Pioneers. And basically their whole model is taking people in non-education roles, or sectors, I should say, and helping them navigate into the education space, but particularly from the lens of like administrator level roles. So they're taking people who worked in corporate, taking people who had law backgrounds, medicine backgrounds, engineering backgrounds, and then helping them make the transition. So I left my role in Wall Street. I went to this fellowship program, and at the time did a 10-week summer program with Teach for America. I was consulting in their adult learning practice nationally. And I'll tell you, Deb, I really believe that that little bit of cushion that I had between initially stepping out, having that first client and partner to work with, helped, at least from the confidence standpoint. It helped me really see that it was possible. It was a different working nature. It was a different even location of work. It's the first time I had ever been able to work remotely. I had always gone into the office. And so all of those kind of transformational things that sometimes can happen when you take the leap out of corporate happened that summer. And so I had the emotions, but I had a little bit of that buffer. And so I would say, like, thinking through, especially when you're about to transition, what are the different affiliations or organizations, the Elevates of the world, the Luminaries of the world, like all of those communities? Because really, Education Pioneers for me was a community. And that community really helped me on the confidence standpoint and the safety even standpoint initially in the beginning. So I think that, you know, that's just one piece that I would share was helpful. The first year in general, Deb, oh my goodness. Like it was, I literally can remember my times in New York City. Like, I don't think I ever cried that much on the subway. Like it was the year of the tears. and that's the honest truth, right? But I think I always tell my family and my friends, something broke in me, something lifted in me, something empowering really took hold in me that year. Because I think, again, that was the year where I learned there was so much more in me that I would have never been able to experience if I had stayed in my job, just kind of going through the motions. Because truly, after that year, I was putting in the work from the beginning. But after that 1 year mark, Deb, that's where I started to just see like opportunity after opportunity after opportunity just present itself. And, you know, I think about 2 years. I hit 2 years last September. And when I think about some of the growth in the standpoint of our team, having a team members, when I think about the depth of our partnerships, our revenue in the middle of a pandemic, we had a great year last year. We landed our first six-figure contract with a CPG company. And so there's something powerful when we stay in it, staying in it even when we don't know what's ahead.
You know, there's so many gems in your story. And thank you for sharing the vulnerability of the year of tears, because, you know, it is so radically different. When you're working in the corporate world, it's like you're scheduled to the hilt. And suddenly you make the leap and now you're in charge, you're the CEO, and you're facing this blank slate of who am I, number one, who am I as the CEO? What are my values? What are my priorities? And how do I actually connect the dots and make this vision a reality? And I'm so glad too that you mentioned networks and affiliations. You know, we met in the combined networks of Elevate, and I talk about Elevate Network a lot. I talk about Luminary in New York a lot. And definitely, if you're listening, look into those memberships. We're global now. A lot of our content, our community, our connections and content is all accessible via Zoom. So join us. We'd love to get to know you. But also, it's so important to cultivate those relationships so that when you are making a leap, there are people who are already cheering you on and pulling in your corner. So that was a great point too. So thanks for for mentioning that. So let's talk about College Code. You self-funded this baby, is that right?
I sure did. Yes,
wow.
Yes,
ma'am. So congratulations on that six-figure contract. I mean, number one, I know how dedicated you are. I know how hard you work. I also know how passionate and articulate you are when speaking on that international stage. So tell us about College Code. Where are you now? How have you built that success? What have you done to get you to where you are now? And tell us a story. Like, where has College Code actually impacted the disparity in the recruiting efforts and has brought in more diversity in those early stage careers?
Yes. Love it. Love it. Love talking about College Code. Literally, we are leaders in the development and retention of early stage professionals, as I mentioned. We are leading one of the nation's fastest growing early career communities. There are not very many early career communities that exist across demographics and discipline. And so we are really in an, I believe, an untapped space. What I would say about, you know, College Code is, again, historically, if you talk to most companies, their early career focus is internships or like university relations. As you and I know, Deb, not every organization is large enough to have an established like intern or university relations arm of the business. So some of them, it's just simply a matter of, some of them, it's just a matter of saying, you know, how can we start to establish partnerships and how can partnerships play a role in helping us to tap into kind of, you know, this Gen Z population. And so for us, really, it's a broader conversation on the multi-generational work. Place, like really the heart of it is, how do we start to understand that our workforce and workplaces are changing? How do we start to understand that this next generation of workers, i.e. Gen Z and Alpha would receive them, how are their experiences different and going to continue to evolve and be different? And how are employers going to need to reimagine their programs, policies, and practices for the future? And so we are really playing a role in the standpoint of development and competencies. How do we start helping this next generation build the competencies and skill sets that are necessary? When we think about COVID-19 and the disruption, that's bringing a whole new slew of competencies that we probably weren't talking about in 2018, you know, as an example, that we now need to make sure the next generation are prepared to continue to build. And then the other piece is around retention. You can go and you can do all these efforts to recruit diverse people, but if you don't actually have a retention strategy, if you don't have a way to actually keep them, what's the point? You go and you form a partnership with Howard University, for example, or with Wellesley, as an example. But if we're not thinking, Deb, about long term, how do we create a pipeline where these talented individuals can evolve, develop, and move into manager and senior level roles and bring their exceptional intelligence to the actual business to help us connect with our customers and clients? Well, we're really just wasting money on recruiting efforts. And so a lot of the work these days are retention too. How do we develop? Yes, but how do we retain in 2021 and beyond? And so we consult and advise our partners in that space, and we initiate what we've created to be a licensed career development program for the early stage that we leverage with our nonprofit, higher ed, and corporate partners. So that's a little bit of what we're doing. I think when you talk about a best practice, Deb, last year, I mean, we talked about it, COVID, the impact on higher ed, we know was substantial and is still happening now. Obviously, the impact on the workplace and the workforce. And so we quickly said last year, how can we be of service? You know, we're in the business of service. We're service providers. We're in the business of service. How can we be of service to this next generation amid everything happening in higher ed and in homes and with families? And so we created a Jumpstart to Career program. We basically offered the program from May all the way through the summer. We partnered with some of the nation's largest and most impactful organizations to bring professionals together, students together, to really help them, especially graduates of the class of 2020, navigate through that really unprecedented time for them, especially underrepresented populations, giving them the resources, the tools, the support, the network, the community to thrive. Our efforts led to our first last year corporate partnership with Capfinity. Capfinity are leaders in strengths-based assessment. So it was a perfect partnership of talent development and strengths assessment. And that partnership helped dozens of students identify and build their strengths to be able to land competitive job opportunities and really position themselves for promotion. And so that's a success story. We didn't know it would lead to the partnership when we started just being of service and hosting these roundtables weekly, but it ended up turning into this beautiful partnership that has helped people really economically advance themselves and really make an impact on their families.
That's so amazing. And, you know, as a mom of a college senior who's, you know, I had a session with him last night about job search.
Yes.
And we updated his LinkedIn profile. And there's really nowhere for him to go to get this kind of guidance. I'm going to have to connect him with you.
Yes.
Yeah, I will, to join in the program because, you know, like you said, really talented young people. And I can remember being in the corporate world and having an intern from Yale one year. And she did such an amazing job helping us to prioritize markets. And I was working in the marketing department at that time. And we hired her. And today she's like a managing vice president at Gartner and doing really great work and making an impact. So landing the right job and having those, the capability and connection to create those partnerships is so, so important. It can really launch someone's career in the right direction. So yeah, anything you want to add to that?
I do, really quickly, Deb. I just want to say, because you and I have talked about it, I think it's really important for people to know at College Code, we use the term diverse broadly. We literally mean students and early career professionals across the board. What we do say, though, is we approach our work through an inclusive and equitable lens. So when we're talking about career development, we know, we've talked about it, Deb, the experience of navigating college and preparing for career for a first-generation student is different than a non-first-generation student. So our lens is we want to help reimagine career development and career retention at the early stage, but we want to do it through an inclusive and equitable lens. It's just, I wanted to bring that up because you brought up your son, who is a white, you know, a white male. And I think that sometimes you get the question, diverse, what does that mean to you, Chelsea? What does that mean to College Code? And we literally mean it by the term, the broadest sense of the term diversity, but we're going to make sure that we're holding space for some of these underrepresented populations who have not historically received the access and opportunity that really, if given, would help them really thrive and be successful in these spaces.
Yeah. And I so appreciate you bringing that up as well. My son is very inclusive in his diversity of friends. And, you know, it's a value that we hold as a family as well. So let's talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, because I know along with College Code, you're an in-demand speaker, consultant, and I work with other women who are launching their businesses who are DEI consultants. And what I'm hearing from the inside is there are many companies right now, because it's popular, giving it a lot of lip service, like, oh, we have this DEI effort going on. Frequently, they appoint a woman of color to run it. Mm-hmm. And yet, when they hire a consultant, they just kind of want some internal presentations. But when it comes to the actual implementation of real change, they're not really going there. So is that common? Are you seeing that across the board as well?
Yeah, it's a great point. I actually spent this morning on a panel through Luminary, how we're connected, and it was about the talent pipeline of Black women in the corporate space. We were talking about what's happening. And I think, listen, when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion in companies, if we believe that it is just the responsibility of the underrepresented populations or the chief diversity officer or even just the CEO or the employee resource groups, like all of these different groups, we're missing it, because it really is it requires all hands on deck. It must be strategic in nature, not a program, not a check the box. It's got to be a way of life. There's got to be measurement in terms of the expectations. People need to know the vision. And, you know, organizations can ask themselves, small business or corporation, what do you want to be known as? I think more organizations can ask themselves that question. who do you want to be known as externally and even internally? And if you can identify that and then actually live those values through in practice and, you know, in culture and in practice, you're going to win. I think when we talk about the points and how multifaceted advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion is, I think of four pillars. I think of access and pipeline. How are we getting in talent into our organizations? What sources and partnerships do we have? Are we thinking holistically about that? If we're noticing that we are not getting diverse talent, say we're talking about racial diversity, racially diverse talent in the sourcing pools, well, that means we have a sourcing or pipeline issue. And so how do we expand our partnerships and expand where we're looking to broaden that? Those are questions we can ask. Then it's about roles. What are the roles available in our industry sector company? Is there awareness? Some of these roles you and I know are very technical. If we're talking about very technical fields, we know by nature, you typically may not have many people from underrepresented populations even aware. And so there's a lot of exploration and capacity building we can do to even provide exposure to people on career paths. And then internally, you have development and visibility. Once we get people to our organizations, like I mentioned, what's the development plan for them? Are we just expecting them to just stay put and rock out with us for a decade or two? Those days are no longer here. You know, a lot of people are thinking about the next few years, like, what am I going to do in the next few years? And so we need to be thinking about continuous development, continuous micro-learning. How are we creating visibility for our people? And connected to that point of visibility, point four is mentorship and sponsorship. As we all know, mentorship, those moments that can happen in any form or fashion that provide us education, support, resources, and sponsorship being the really game changer, open doors, access, putting my name on the line for you to be able to advance and really have a seat at the table. All four of those pillars, Deb, have to be at work. We can't just be focused on access and pipeline and not focused on visibility and sponsorship. We have to have key players, stakeholders identified to help push forward all of those different components of our employee life cycle. And then once we have taken care of business internally, then we are more proactive in our marketplace impact, our customer engagement, our business prospecting, because we have really maximized our people within our organizations.
That is so beautifully said. I love those four pillars and so clear. So it's so much more than just recruiting. It's how are we supporting the people once they're on the team, once they're on the staff? What's that experience for them? And I also have a lot of clients who are talking about mentorship, about the dearth of mentorship that's available to women particularly, but I'm sure to diverse populations as well. So tell us, what is next for Chelsea, the CEO? What is your next frontier as you continue to grow and scale this business? Because you've really shot out like a meteor. You've made so many great decisions, but I think it's also reflective of just your clarity, your intelligence, your ability to communicate what's necessary, your passion, your mission. But what's next for Chelsea, the CEO? What's next for your business?
Yeah, I love that. So what's next for Chelsea, the CEO? Let's do that first. Building the team. So we have six members of our team currently and continuing to provide, you know, capacity for them, highlighting their strengths. The stronger the team, the stronger our delivery of service to our partners. And so I think I have started thinking more about the team itself. And as a service provider, you know, it's either growing your team, getting more clients and partners and growing your team, or it's product. And so I think the secondary piece, Deb, is we want to start thinking about product. We're going to only be able to reach our partners in a thoughtful and effective way and really work with more people as we take some of what historically has been done via service per se and turn it into actual virtual or technology focused learning modules. So this year I'm focused a lot on the product piece of our growth. So that's on the business side. I think for me personally, I'm a storyteller by nature. I absolutely love speaking. I truly love speaking because I love to empower people to take those next steps. And so this year I've got some pretty big goals in terms of expanding the partners and stages that I get to share the College Code story and some of the vital importance of equity and inclusion with. And so, you know, a TED talk when we can get back in person is a big goal that I have. And just continuing to develop, you know, my personal skills as a thought leader, whether that is authoring a book or launching a course. There's a few things that I have in my mind and in my heart.
I think that's so key. And, you know, so many entrepreneurs are looking at the same path. I mean, getting out there, really being seen and heard and being known for something. You mentioned early in our conversation, leaving a legacy.
Yes.
So what is the legacy that we want to leave? You know, certainly Life After Corporate is a book that I have in mind. I haven't carved out the time to write it yet, but it will definitely happen. So how can our listeners refer to you? How can they stay in touch with you, whether it is through College Code or through hiring you as a speaker? What's the best way for listeners to get in touch?
Yes. So two big ways. The first is, let's talk College Code. If you are interested in some support in the development and retention of early stage professionals or students, you can go to mycollegecode, so mycollegecode.com. You can subscribe to our newsletter. You can send us a direct contact message, and a member of our team will set up some time to talk with you about your vision. Okay, so that's College Code. Now, for me, if you're interested in bringing me in to share my story or to deliver best practices on diversity, equity, and inclusion, LinkedIn. I suggest for now you find me on LinkedIn at Chelsea C. Williams. And that is a beautiful way for us to be able to connect. I'm on LinkedIn pretty frequently and post a lot of thought pieces when I'm able to, that really share best practices for maximizing the workforce in the workplace.
And we'll post those links in show notes so people can get them really easily. But the important thing is it's Chelsea C. Williams on LinkedIn. So don't forget the C. And Chelsea, my friend, it has been so great catching up with you here and also learning more about your backstory and your journey and catching up on all the fantastic things that are happening for you now and the mark that you're making on the world. I'm the mom of a college grad. I'm grateful for all the work that you're doing with College Code. And I can't wait to see you in real life one day soon.
I know. And Deb, thank you to you. You have been the most amazing coach. I have so many positive things I can point to for our time together and the way that you have helped to elevate my confidence and my impact. So I'm honored to have been able to join the show. And I wish all listeners the very best as you think about your next step.
Yeah, thank you so much. And that's it for this episode, my friend. Till next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.